Deborah?
Michael.
Mike?
Mm-hmm.
Michael.
The orders of the court are posted in the clerk's office and outside the door and available for your inspection. There are three causes to be submitted at oral argument today, in the order in which they will be presented, they are as follows. Gene and Sandra Shumway versus Horizon Credit Corporation from Harris County, in which matter the court is allowed 20 minutes of oral argument for each side and 5 minutes for rebuttal. Elisha Rose and others versus Marjorie Cahill from Williamson County, in which matter the court is allowed 15 minutes of oral argument for each side and 5 minutes for rebuttal. An InSearch Corporation doing business with Lone Star Gas versus Mary Jean Parker from Dallas County, in which matter the court has allowed 40 minutes oral argument for each side with 10 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel in the second and third causes are not required to remain in the courtroom during the earlier matters, but we ask that you remain nearby so that we may proceed to your matter without delay. The court will take a brief recess in between the presentation of each cause. We will complete the submission of all three causes before our noon break. These arguments are being recorded for the convenience of the court. Anyone who desires to hear tapes of these arguments may make application with the clerk of our court. The court is ready to hear oral argument from petitioners in the cause of Shumway versus Horizon Credit.
Please report, Deborah Good Catholic, with the argument from petitioners.
May it please the court, counsel, justices. My name is Deborah Jo Catlett, and I represent the petitioner in this court, Gene and Sandra Shumway, in this cause number C-8669, which is entitled Gene and Sandra Shumway versus Horizon Credit. I believe Mary Lou Lay will be representing the respondent. At this time, I'd like to give a brief background of the case. This is a case on a suit on default on a promissory note. Under the promissory note, there was 12 provisions for default, one being non-monetary default. A lawsuit was filed, a general denial was filed by the petitioners. A motion for summary judgment was filed by the respondent. And in the motion for summary judgment, there was a statement by respondent's agent, Mr. Plosa, that said that the appellee had accelerated the note in accordance with the rights in the note. The summary judgment was granted. A motion for new trial was filed by the petitioner. The motion for new trial was denied. And an appeal was filed with the First Court of Appeals in Houston, Harris County, Texas. On December 15, 1988, the First Court of Appeals rendered a decision in this case where it reversed and remanded this case back to the 152nd based on the fact that there was no notice of intent to accelerate the promissory note or of notice of acceleration of the note. A timely motion for rehearing was filed by the respondent, and on March 9th, at the rehearing, the court overturned its previous position and held that the language in the note specifically waives petitioner's right to notice of intent to accelerate and of actual acceleration. A second motion for rehearing was filed by a petitioner, which was denied by the First Court of Appeals, and the writ of application was filed herein, which respondent has filed a response. There are two basic issues in front of this court today. The first is whether notice of intent to accelerate or notice of actual acceleration was given as required by law to the petitioners. We believe that the Court of Appeals and the trial court erred in holding that there was a specific waiver of notice of intent to accelerate and of notice of acceleration. The clause in the promissory note, which is the issue here, simply states It's paragraph 12 of the note. It says entire balance due. It simply states that if I default under the note, you may require that the entire balance of the unpaid amount of the unpaid loan plus accrued interest and late charges be paid at once without prior notice or demand. There is no specific mention as to what notice or what demand this note is talking about. As this court is aware, in Ogden versus Gibraltar Savings Association, 640 Southwest 2nd, 232 in 1982, this court promulgated standards notices where there is an optional right to accelerate in a note upon default. This court stated that there were the three notices that must be given prior to acceleration being valid. Those notices were the notice of default, first the notice of default and presentment, second the notice of intent to accelerate, and third the notice of actual acceleration. The court went on to further say that these notices are required to have a valid acceleration and that the acceleration clause is a harsh remedy unless these notices are expressly and unequivocally waived. This court has further stated in Ramo versus English and Motor and Industrial Financial Court versus Hughes that waiver of acceleration clauses must be clear and unequivocal. In this case, Judge Frank Levy of the First Court of Appeals entered a strong dissenting opinion saying that the language was certainly not clear or unequivocal, that they were waiving the notice of right of intent to accelerate or waiving the right of actual notice of acceleration.
Was that Judge Evans or Judge Levy?
I'm sorry, that's Judge Evans, Your Honor.
All right.
Judge Evans said that acceleration clauses must be clear and unequivocal. Did he say that waiver must be clear and unequivocal?
I believe he said, Your Honor, that the waiver must be clear and unequivocal. In this case, there are 12 bases for default. 11 of those bases for default are non-monetary bases. It would be a very harsh remedy to say that we waive all notices of acceleration with the language contained in this note and not provide a method of curing a non-monetary default. The Court of Appeals, in its opinion, relied on four cases. These cases were Real Estate Exchange, Inc. versus Bakke, which was decided in the First Court of Appeals in 1984 at 676 Southwest 2nd, 440, which there was no writ. The next case was Silva, which is S-L-I-V-K-A, versus Swiss Avenue Bank, which was decided by the Dallas Court of Appeals in 1983 at 658 Southwest 2nd, 959. And both of these cases were decided subsequent to this court's ruling in Ogden versus Gibraltar. However, they also relied on two other cases, Valley versus Patterson, 614 Southwest 2nd, 867, a Corpus Christi case, again with no writ, and Phillips versus Westside, a 14th Court of Appeal case, decided in 1968 at 426 Southwest 2nd, 5035, which was also a no writ case. Judge Evans, in his dissent, believes that these cases are distinguishable from the case at hand. There also has been a case which is similar to the case that the court has in front of it, which is the Bader Court case. Style Bodison versus Parker, it was decided in 1983 at 651 Southwest 2nd, 338 in Fort Worth, where the waiver language contained in that case stated, but should grantors make default in the punctual payment of said indebtedness hereby secured, the indebtedness may, at the option of the beneficiary, be immediately matured and become due and payable without notice and demand of any character. In that case, the court held that the option to accelerate without demand or notice was not an express waiver of the intent to accelerate enough. Now, the other two cases that have been cited, which are pre-Ogden and which the Court of Appeals relied in its judgment, are the real estate exchange case, which I previously mentioned, and I would like to discuss and distinguish that case for a moment. The real estate exchange case had a waiver provision in it, which states that in the event default is made in payment of the principal of this note or any unpaid interest, holders shall have the right without demand or notice to declare the note immediately due and payable. Therefore, the court held that this language related directly to acceleration. However, in this case, the notice of acceleration was given. In our case at bar, there was no notice of acceleration or notice of intent to accelerate. The court said in this case that acceleration must be expressly waived, that the notice of acceleration must be expressly waived. However, it went on to further say that since this language, the previous quoted language, was sufficient to constitute a waiver of acceleration, that the appellants in that case were under no legal duty to notify appellees of its intent to accelerate the case. I believe this case is in direct contrast with the Gibraltar versus Ogden case, the Ogden versus Gibraltar case, excuse me, in that in Gibraltar versus Ogden, this court clearly said that the waiver of one of any of the three notices would not suffice to uphold acceleration. Further, in both the real estate exchange versus Bakke, the Silva versus Swiss Avenue Bank case, the Valley versus Patterson case, and the Phillips versus Whiteside case, all the waivers clauses talk directly as to default in payment. In our case at present, it only talks about if I default, then I waive notice and demand. The other case, which is a post-Ogden case, which the Court of Appeals relied on, was Silva versus Swiss Avenue Bank. In Silva versus Swiss Avenue Bank, the court did not even, it was decided in Dallas, the court did not even address the Ogden case, the Ogden versus Gibraltar. It was an appeal from a full trial on the merits. It involved both a note and a deed of trust. The note contained a waiver provision that said, failure to pay any installment or principal when due shall at the option of the holder immediately mature this note and the indebtedness evidenced hereby as fully as if the entire time has expired without demand, presentment, and notice, the same being expressly waived. The provisions of the deed of trust also contained a waiver provision that said if there is a default of any payment or any part thereof under the note, then the note together with all other sums secured hereby at the option of the note holder will become once due and payable without demand or notice other than notice provided herein. The court in this case said that the notes were actually introduced into evidence. And since the notes were introduced into evidence, there was some evidence at trial of waiver. And it was simply that the notes had been introduced into evidence, and therefore they found that there was some evidence because of the provisions in the notes of waiver. The third case that the majority opinion relies on is Valley versus Patterson at 614 Southwest 2nd 867. It was decided before Ogden versus Gibraltar. It also was a trial on the merits. In this case, acceleration notice was given. However, it was given by telegram on February 9th. On February 9th, also a letter of default went out, but it went out by certified mail. So the acceleration notice was came before the notice of default. The issue that was presented to the court was the acceleration void because the acceleration notice was given prior to the notice of demand. The note did contain, however, this specific waiver clause, that each maker, surety, and endorser of this note expressly waives all notices, demands for payment, presentations for payment, notices of intent to accelerate the maturity, protest, and notice of protest as to this note in each and every installment. The court held that the waiver of demand and the waiver of intent to accelerate had already been waived, and therefore the acceleration clause, the acceleration notice was valid, and the note was properly accelerated.
Counsel, is your client making monthly payments on this note?
Excuse me, Justice Gonzalez?
Is your client making the monthly payments on the note?
At this time, no.
And you're asking us, if we would agree with your position, to reverse the Court of Appeals so we can get the status quo back to prior to acceleration and commence making the monthly payments?
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, if I may address it a little bit further, the note is on a sailboat which had been damaged, and the insurance company would also be involved in for paying for the damages and paying for some of the notes. So we would like, to get it back to the status quo so we could take care of it.
There's no question you defaulted, is there?
No, Your Honor. There's no question there was a default under the note.
How could this clause be made clear in your view?
In my view, Your Honor, I think that it has to be specific. I think that you have to specifically weigh each of the rights that this court has previously pronounced. Meaning that
I waive notice of intent to accelerate, notice of
acceleration, notice of demand, and notice of presentment. And I think in doing that, which is certainly, I think a lot of the notes in Texas now have that particular language, and in doing that, that conveys to the maker of the note that they are actually waiving those rights when they enter into this note agreement.
You think that's true? You think the Shumways knew the difference between notice of intent to accelerate and notice of acceleration?
Well, Your Honor, I don't know whether they would have known, but I think they would have taken it to a lawyer at the time. The lawyer would certainly be able to explain it to them. And
you think they would have said, wait a minute, I don't mind waiving notice of intent to accelerate, but I don't want to waive notice of acceleration.
Exactly, Your Honor. And
the ordinary borrowers are going to point that out and say, up?
Well, maybe not, Your Honor, from that standpoint. But what I do think is that if you get the notice of acceleration, that you're more likely, an ordinary person is more likely to take the bull by the horn, so to speak, and to proceed to try to correct the situation or reach some sort of solution prior to getting to a lawsuit in the civil court.
Why, under your view, shouldn't there be some explanation in the note as well of what's being waived, what the difference is between notice of intent to accelerate and notice of acceleration?
In my view, I think that would be something that would be greatly beneficial to a note holder. I believe that the standard maker of a note probably is not sophisticated enough to really know what they're waiving. And then all of a sudden when a suit is filed, having the entire amount accelerated, they're put in an unfair position because they were not really aware of what they were waiving to begin with.
If you have to explain the significance of each provision of a note to an ordinary layperson, it's going to be a pretty long note, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor. I think another way that we could get around that is that the waiver provisions be put in some sort of bold or line of bold, be required to be bold-faced or capitalized or stand out in some way so that the note itself is telling the maker by this being put out in a different way than the other parts of the note that these are important rights that they need to look into. Then if they choose to ignore that, then they have made a choice, but there at least have been some sort of warning or some extra notice that these are important rights that they're giving up.
Counsel, are you familiar with Section 3511 of the Uniform Commercial Code dealing with excuse?
No, Your Honor, I'm not. Again, I was getting to the case, the last case, which was Phillips versus Weiss side, which the Court of Appeals relied on. It was, again, a pre-Ogden case. It was a trespass to try title. It was a foreclosure. It was based on a foreclosure of a note. In the there was a waiver provision, but in the deed of trust, there was a express clause that said that that expressly provided that the trustee, the deed executed by the trustee shall be full evidence and prima facie proof of each and all matters recited therein, and no other proof shall be requisite thereof, including maturity of the indebtedness. The court looked to the note in the deed of trust and said, because of the language in the deed of trust, that the provisions for waiver and demand were valid. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. Court is ready to hear arguments from response.
Your Honors, may it please the Court, my name is Mary Lou Lay, and I represent the respondent herein, Horizon Credit Corp. Your Honors, we believe that this case, as stated by the petitioner herein, is simply a case involving the interpretation or whether the waiver clause adequately tells the maker of this note what was waived herein.
Do you agree that it has to be clear and unequivocal?
Your Honor, I do not, and I am prepared to discuss that. I believe that it has to actually give notice of what is being waived, but I think the clear and unequivocal language, as stated throughout these cases, applies to clear and unequivocal notice of acceleration, and that the acceleration clause is clear and unequivocal. Just backing up 1 minute, I would like to state that we do agree with the statement of facts as stated by the petitioner herein, with one clarification, and that is when the Court of Appeals first heard this case and determined to reverse the decision of the trial court, that opinion was based, which was issued by the Court of Appeals, quoted the acceleration clause and waiver clause in this note, and that waiver clause was mistakenly quoted by the Court of Appeals. On motion for rehearing, this mistake, in fact, I believe three extra words were added into the clause by the Court of Appeals just as a misinterpretation, and when that misinterpretation was pointed out by the Court of Appeals did in fact uphold the judgment of the trial court. Which brings us to this court today. I would like to first discuss the case law as it applies and point out what I believe to be some of the inconsistencies in the petitioner's argument. First of all, I believe, as petitioner has stated, the leading case on notices in this state is the Ogden versus Gibraltar Savings case, which states that, and as this court knows much better than I do, that there are three things which need to be done before a note can be accelerated, and that is presentment of the note to the maker, demand or intent, notice of intent to accelerate if past payments are not made current, and then actual notice of acceleration. But the court specifically points out in Ogden, and to my knowledge, this has not been changed by this court to date, these do not apply when there is a waiver provision in the note. Most of the arguments of the petitioner in this case simply bypass the waiver clause and have determined that the waiver clause is invalid and therefore go straight to whether the three, I guess, factors have been complied with. In petitioner's application for writ to this court, petitioner states that when acceleration clauses are optional, the maker cannot declare the entire amount due. My review of the Ogden case simply does not state this. The Ogden case discusses an optional acceleration clause, not an optional waiver clause, and I think that is where the confusion comes in petitioner's brief, and I had to read it several times before I was clear on exactly what was being stated. It appears that in Ogden, an optional acceleration clause requires an unequivocal notice that in fact there is going to be an acceleration if past due payments are not made current. Now this just simply, in Ogden I believe the holder of the note stated that that once again they may declare it due, so the option continued through notices, and that is what the court found was not unequivocal notice. Nowhere in that case or any of the circuit court cases that I have, or excuse me, the Court of Appeals cases that I have reviewed, do they discuss unequivocal, clear and unequivocal waiver clauses. All the clear and unequivocal language comes with respect to the acceleration clauses, and they are not even discussing waiver clauses themselves.
Why should the standard be different?
I believe that, Your Honor, that the standard is not necessarily different, but I believe that the acceleration clauses are more confusing to anybody, to a layman or a lawyer. I think that an acceleration clause, especially since the majority of them are optional, because a creditor usually wants to give itself the option. It doesn't want to have to accelerate. But I have not seen any situations where the notice clause was optional. And
so your contention is that even though the notice clause must be clear and unequivocal, the waiver clause doesn't have to be and shouldn't have to be.
Well, Your Honor, I don't believe the cases say they do. I believe personally that they ought to tell the maker what exactly he is waiving. And I do believe
clearly
that
clearly and unequivocally?
Your Honor, I'm not really sure how those both words fit in to this situation. I do believe that in this situation the purpose of the law is to give a layman, unsophisticated maker the opportunity to know exactly what is being done, and I'm not sure that clear and unequivocal is the standard so much as just simply, does this adequately notify the maker of exactly what he is waiving?
If clearly and unequivocal, clear and unequivocal language were the standard for waiver as well as notice, would the waiver clause in this case pass that standard?
Your Honor, I believe it would, and I would like to read that clause to the court. It says under Section 10 of the note, titled Entire Balance Due, if I default under this note, you may require that the entire unpaid balance of the amount of the loan plus accrued interest and late charges be paid at once without prior notice or demand. It appears to me, Your Honors, that I'm not really sure how it could be more clear without being confusing. I think this note, and the court, it is part of the record, I think this note is very simple and very concise, and it's not filled with a great amount of legalese, which the makers, who were not lawyers in this instance, would not understand. It is simply written in layman's terms. I believe that the petitioner would have drafters of these instruments be specific and speak of presentment and acceleration and notice of intent to accelerate. And I don't believe the average person that is not a lawyer practicing in this area of the law has any familiarity with. Acceleration is a legal term of art. It's not a term of art that the average person uses. It's in this note, which is in evidence in this case, it talks about the entire unpaid balance being paid. And it can be paid, they may require it to be paid under this, without prior notice or demand. It doesn't go through all the elements because an average layman doesn't know about those. The average person reading this without knowledge of these so-called terms of art used by lawyers and the court basically tells the maker what is being done here. Finally, with respect to the Court of Appeals cases cited by the petitioner, I believe each one of those cases follows Ogden. There is not one that I have seen that specifically or even generally, even in dicta, disputes any holding of Ogden. Ogden did not have a waiver clause, so from the outset it is not, there was no determination of what a proper waiver clause was since there was not one in the case. Therefore, the cases that go through, the cases following Ogden state that yes, Ogden is the law and the three factors must be present in order for a maker to accelerate a note, but not when there is a waiver clause. And the waiver clause in Ogden as well as the Allen case both state that waiver clauses specifically change that the three-prong requirement. In each of the Court of Appeals cases where waiver clauses are specifically discussed, each case that upheld the waiver clause stated that it was valid with respect to acceleration. It gave proper notice. The cases, any case that specifically determined that the waiver clause was invalid did not determine it was invalid because it failed to properly give notice, but rather that it modified a different different area. For instance, one of the cases stated that it modified or that it referred instead not to waiver of notice of acceleration but waiver of notice of foreclosure. And there was specifically an and in there which stated that it referred to foreclosure rather than acceleration. And there is not one case that we have found that states that although notice of demand was waived, it was not clear enough. All of the cases referred to something besides, said that the acceleration clause referred to something besides notice of waiving notice of acceleration. Finally, with respect to the petitioner's second point of error, and that is whether there was sufficient summary judgment evidence to conclude that if in fact notice was necessary, that it was given. The affidavit which was presented in summary judgment evidence stated that the maker had accelerated the note in accordance with, or had demanded payment in accordance, had accelerated the note in accordance with its rights under the note. Although this may be a legal conclusion, it would have been admissible in a court of law at the trial level without absent an objection. If the affiant in this case were on the stand and were asked, Did Horizon Credit do everything that was required to accelerate this note and obtain payment? And the answer was yes. If that answer was unobjected to, it would have been evidence of the same. And that's exactly what we have in this summary judgment case. We have a statement of that nature, and we have no objection. We have no specific reference to a defect in the affidavit as being conclusory. All of this was brought up for the first time at the Court of Appeals level. It has come through the Court of Appeals on two motions for rehearing, and now is at the Supreme Court. I believe that if, in fact, this was a defect, which this court believes was present in the affidavit, it should and could have been corrected at the trial court level without the necessity of spending all the parties and the taxpayers' time in this action. I think that is the main reason that we have the rules of civil procedure, which require parties to bring these things up at the trial level, to not go through this procedure and spend the parties in the court's time in this matter.
So that I'll be clear, your position is that even if this waiver is not clear and equivocal enough to be effective, nevertheless, the summary judgment evidence establishes that you did all you had to do to sue upon the note.
Yes, Your Honor. Based upon the fact that we believe to be the case, that the waiver clause in this note, which states that the entire unpaid balance of the loan plus accrued interest and late charges be paid at once without prior notice or demand, based upon the fact that we believe that an average person reading that would find that he has waived notices, whatever notices they may be, and the fact that that language is clear, also the fact that even if this court finds that somehow that language is misleading, we feel that the summary judgment evidence, which was unobjected to, is sufficient to sustain the verdict of the trial court and the Court of Appeals, and we would ask that this court affirm those judgments. Thank you.
Thank you, Kim.
May it please the court. I would like to address Ms. Lay's argument as to what is understandable as to an express waiver, whether it's specific or unequivocal. The waiver of notice of intent to accelerate and notice of acceleration at least has to be an express waiver. In Judge Evans' dissenting opinion, he stated, here the note clearly does not reflect whether the words without prior notice refer to prior notice of a default or whether these words refer to prior notice of the holder's intent to accelerate. He said, although it might be argued that the parties intended this waiver provision to be a waiver of the holder's obligation to give notice of intent to accelerate, the language of the instrument does not require such interpretation. An equally reasonable interpretation is that the maker intended to waive prior notice of default or make prior demand for payment. Judge Evans went on to say, thus in his opinion, the waiver provision did not clearly and unequivocally show that the maker waived his very valuable right to receive notice of the holder's intent to accelerate maturity. And that's what we're looking at today. Whether it was a specific waiver of the notice of intent to accelerate, whether that language construed to the maker of whether he was giving up the valuable right of notice of acceleration and notice of intent to accelerate. I think the language is very unclear, that is contained in the note at present, and certainly does not specifically give notice to the maker that they are waiving those rights. I'd like to quickly address the second point, which is that there's no competent summary judgment proof, even if this court finds that the waivers was waived, that the waivers were specifically waived by the language in the note. As this court is aware, it's the movement's burden to present evidence at the summary judgment hearing. As this court is aware, a non-movement does not even have to answer a motion for summary judgment if the evidence presented is not competent summary judgment proof which will support a granting of a motion for summary judgment. In Clear Creek Basin,
don't you have to object to comply with Clear Creek?
The courts in Clear Creek Basin and in Gibraldo and in, bear with me for a second, it says that no, that they must conclusively prove all elements of a claim, and they must stand on its own merit.
So if a statement is too conclusory, even though you would have to object to it at trial, your position is at summary judgment, you can just keep quiet and then raise it for the first time on appeal.
That's right, yeah.
Why doesn't that violate the if not the letter, the spirit of Clear Creek?
Well, the spirit of the summary, what I understand, the spirit of the summary judgment is not to bring in default judgment. It's to eliminate the cases where there are no fact issues, Your Honor. And if the judgment is based on objectionable evidence or non-competent evidence, a legal conclusion is non-competent evidence. It's been stated that in Clear Creek Basin. It's been stated in Hidalgo. For instance, let me address you to the case of recently decided case, but the case of the Court of the Civil Appeals in Hammonds versus Thompson. And it's at 770 Southwest 2nd 1. And it is a case whereby there was no objection to the language that was in the summary judgment proof. And my time's up. Okay. And it's a standard of care on a medical malpractice case. They say that the statement that I've met the standard of care is a conclusory statement. And in order for it to be competent summary judgment proof to uphold the summary judgment, it has to specify what is the standard of care. In our case, I would say...
Well, that's a little different than, isn't it, than...
In our case...
The whole point in the medical malpractice case is establishing what the standard of care is.
Exactly. But in our case, you could relate it, Your Honor, to this case, in that they just simply stated that we followed the requirements of the note. They made no statement that we followed the what requirements they followed in accelerating the note. And I think that's the same thing as what the court's going to say. Not only do you have to follow...
I believe we have your thoughts.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you,
counsel.
The court will take a brief recess.
Or is taking a brief recess.